the Yes to Life show, and I'm the regular presenter for the show, Robin Daly. Integrative medicine for cancer, which is what the show is all about, is nothing if not broad and inclusive. This week's show is about letter writing, not exactly a treatment, but possibly an important element in meeting the psychological and emotional challenges of cancer, which are substantial. Brian Greenlee and Alison Hitchcock have set up From Me to You, following their extraordinary shared experience recently captured in the Listening Project by the BBC. Brian came to visit me at my home in Surrey to tell me about the project. Hi Brian, thanks a lot for coming on the show today, coming over to see me in Surrey. I'm going to hopefully hear all about your campaign, From Me to You. Sounds rather redolent of an early Beatles number. Is that where it came from?
No, by accident it didn't.
Right, okay. But anyway, you set it up with Alison Hitchcock. It's a bit of a first for the show. I can't say we've ever had a show focusing on a cancer therapy of letter writing, so this is very different. Your strapline is encouraging people to write letters to friends with cancer. Why?
Why? Because, A, it alleviates social isolation, because it means that people are thinking of you, and it gets through the, as I like to call it, the bubble that surrounds you when you're having treatment for cancer, because you're so used to going for appointments, to the hospital, to the oncologist, to the doctors, to the nurse, that you're in a bubble of another world that you never had before, and you sort of lose contact with your life as it was. And a letter can actually get through the bubble, because it comes through your front letterbox. So you can't ignore it like you can ignore a text or a telephone call or an email. A letter comes through the door and it preys on your mind that you want to open it.
You're right, it does. If it looks interesting.
Yes. And especially because it's not a bill,
yeah,
or a credit card statement or something like that.
Spam.
It's normally a handwritten envelope, so you get to, curiosity gets the better of you.
Okay, well look, this whole initiative stems from your own personal story of cancer. So just to give us a bit of context, would you mind telling us about your own diagnosis, your treatment and your current health?
Yes. So I was diagnosed with bowel cancer at the age of 52 back in June 2010, and under the NICE guidelines I was told that it was grade 3, and the treatment therefore equals radiotherapy, surgery and if necessary chemotherapy.
The lot.
So naively, I didn't know that much about cancer. I didn't even know what cancer was at that time. I had to get by a book about to try and find out what it even was, discovered what it was and thought to myself, well, I don't know how I got this. I thought I had a healthy lifestyle, but it seems I didn't. It seems I was hanging out with the devil's foods and the devil's drink occasionally, which wasn't doing me any good. So I started the course of radiotherapy, and that didn't shrink the tumour, which was the aim of it, in order that I wouldn't have to have a permanent colostomy. So the diagnosis went in and said that after the 5 weeks of treatment was that, well, it hasn't shrunk that much, and you are going to have a permanent colostomy. For me, it was nearly as bad as being told I had cancer, because I was adamant that I didn't want to have a permanent colostomy. I didn't understand what one was. I was a bit naive again about that, but when I did my research, I thought to myself, you know, that's really going to hamper my life and my lifestyle. Looking back on it now, it probably wouldn't have done. But at the time, it was just paramount in my mind that that's something I didn't want. So I eventually saw a very fine surgeon there who said that he could operate on my cancer tumour and remove it without the need for a colostomy bag being permanent. It would just be a temporary ileostomy while the large colon recovered. I thought, great, this is the business.
Right.
Prognosis whether it's spent to the lymph nodes, and so I was going to have chemotherapy. So then I had 6 months with the chemotherapy, got my reversal, spent most of my time on the loo afterwards, while my body adjusted to it all coming back into sync. And a month after that, I had to have a routine blood test, and they found that the CEA levels were high, which meant that they sent me for another CT scan. And during that scan, they found that the previous treatment hadn't worked and that I now had a metastasis on my liver. So they decided to operate. Fortunately, there was only the one tumour there. And they resected the liver, took 60% away. And 6 weeks later, I was on a plane going on holiday, the one that I had had to cancel before. So they referred me to an oncologist. The oncologist told me that he wasn't going to give me any chemotherapy, which I was totally relieved about. The previous chemotherapy hadn't worked, and he needed to hold fire on any other stronger treatments in case I needed them if there were multiple tumours. So I got on with my life and decided that I needed to do something different, because if I carry on doing the same thing, you get the same results. I went to the Pennybron Cancer Care Centre near Bristol for them, one of their Live and Well courses. And there I discovered the enlightenment of living well, which meant that I wasn't or hadn't been living well.
You thought you were.
But... thought I was. Thought I'd been hanging out. But it seems I'm just hanging out with the devil's foods and the devil's drink. So I revamped my life and went to see Dr. Henry in Bristol, who helped me with giving me some supplements to take and prescribed CV247. And that sort of transformed my view of empowerment. Suddenly I was now in control of my cancer and not everyone else. But 6 months later, the prophecy of the oncologist that would be back within 6 months was true, and a routine CT scan 6 months after the liver resection showed that I had a 7mm tumour in the right, top right lobe of my lung.
That's in a blow.
Which was devastating, because I thought I was really turned a corner and on it. But I thought, okay, this is just another trial, and I'm not going to change anything. I'm going to carry on doing what I'm doing. They insisted I had a PET scan. There were no other tumours anywhere in my body. And we decided that they would remove the tumour. We could have waited and see what happens.
Yeah.
But I said, just take it out. So we did. There was no reduction in lung capacity, so I thought, fine. And carried on with my regime. And 6 months later, my first scan again, and that was all clear. And I didn't really believe it. Hadn't been there once before. Right. I felt really uncertain. Okay. But I thought, carry on doing what you're doing.
Shaky, all clear.
Yeah, it was like, I don't really believe this, but I have to.
Yeah.
So then the next one, and I thought, if the next one comes along clear, then that's a sign that I am doing the right things and I can get on with my life. I'd given up work, so I didn't have the stresses of my job. And so 6 months later, it was clear. And for the last 4.5 years, I have been clear.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
I put it down to healthy living now, green juice and lots of green vegetables.
Well, that's great. I mean, it's a very empowering message. And it's interesting that it does, putting the brakes on a cancer that's been going full on is quite a big deal, isn't it? It does take time for it to turn around. Obviously, like you had this one other small tumour, it's like it hasn't quite kicked, it killed the momentum. Yeah.
I think your body has to readjust to not being, because I believe that these tumours are already in your body and they can survive on what your body is behaving like. But if you change the behaviour of how your body reacts, then it doesn't give it an environment for it to exist.
Well, great. Very pleased to hear that. Okay, so I'd like to get on to talking about your friendship with Alison now. Yeah. If you could tell us a bit about that, why she started writing to you and why it had such a big impact on you.
So I met Alison 6 months before I was diagnosed with cancer, so she's a fairly new acquaintance.
Right.
We were met in a yoga retreat in Goa.
Mm.
And the only thing we had in common was that we were both from London, we both worked in the city. She had a very different lifestyle from mine, and she was there thinking of setting up a yoga studio, Pilates studio business. And I was there because I was on garden leave and thought it might be a good idea just to go to India, and thought, going on my own, what am I going to do? Oh, I'll go to a yoga retreat. I've always wanted to do one. Seemed like a good idea. And we sort of got on okay. It was one of those friendships that you have on holiday. And we came back to London and met about three times for a drink in London after work. And when I was diagnosed with cancer, I met with her and another mutual friend, Sarah. We're catching up, saying, you know, what was happening in our lives, what you'd been up to. Came to my turn, and I ummed and ahed whether I should tell them that. Well, I've just been diagnosed with cancer.
It's not a very snappy.
It's not really. Exactly. It's really going to make the conversation turn, isn't it? So, as it was, you know, a thought that was definitely in my mind all the time, trying to make sense of what it was all about, I just blurted it out. And neither of them, because I didn't know them that well, were really, you know, gutted, like when you tell a really close friend, or a family member about it. And I remember Alison and saying, I'm going to write to you, which I thought was the most, which was the most random and odd thing, I thought. And I thought, she has no background of writing.
Right.
I asked her if she'd written letters to other people before. No. But I think she said it because she didn't really know what to say. And her idea was that she was going to write me letters to cheer me up while I was having treatment.
Brilliant.
So that was back in June 2010.
Well, creative.
It was creative. So then we left and we went our separate ways. I got on the train to go back home. Didn't think much of the offer because I had a lot more other pressing important things on my mind. And 2 weeks later, there was a letter on the doormat.
Right, number one.
Number one. So then she carried on writing through the whole 2 years of treatment that I went through. The letters always came every couple of weeks. They always arrived if I was going in for chemotherapy or if I was going in for surgery. They always arrived just before, so I could take them in with me. And they were a lifeline, if you like, for a life that was outside of that I'd sort of had and now didn't. But it was an insight into somebody else's life, because she never wrote empathetic or sympathetic letters telling me, I'm feeling really sorry for you, you know.
Nothing
like that. There were a couple when she, I think the realization of how serious stuff was when it went to stage four and we were dealing with metastases and all that seriousness. But she never once researched all that. She didn't know until fairly recently that it was stage four. She remembers writing this wonderful letter, which was she'd been having her hair done in the hairdressers, and she was reading Vanity Fair, and there was an article by Christopher Hitchens about his cancer. And she said, it made me think of me, and she wrote me a letter, and that was probably the most serious it got. The rest of the time, it was what was happening on an everyday basis in her everyday life, which sometimes was a bit bizarre. But you know, we're all a bit nosy, aren't we? So other people's lives. So it was like a journal. She was like sending me a journal of what was happening in her life. And so I loved it because it really was different. And it was a gift that she had sat down and written those letters to me. And she discovered she had a love of writing.
Okay. So that was a little bit of a bonus for
her.
Which she probably wasn't expecting.
She wasn't expecting it. And it coincided that she applied for an MA and got accepted at Birkbeck at the same time that I got my first All Clear. So it was sort of like this journey we'd been on together suddenly was branching out into something new.
So was this a dialogue, or was it just from her to you? Were you replying or not? I'm interested.
I never wrote back once.
But that's fine, because she offered to write to you.
She offered to write to me. I never said I was going to become a pen pal.
No, exactly.
And to be honest, I really wouldn't know what to have said.
Right, because it's her own story, sort of thing.
Because it was her own story. So there was, over those 2 years, we became great friends. We became best friends.
Mm.
But initially, we weren't. And when we met up over during that 2 year period, our friendship grew because we had something in common, which was the letters, and we could comment and talk about different things. But it was a case of, I didn't know what to say back.
Right.
Because when you're going through cancer treatment, life's not very jolly. You know, I'm not going, because you're not going out having a life that you normally had. You don't see the things that you normally see.
So all you've got to report is rather hospitally kind of stuff.
Yeah, here I am sat again in a blue chair in a chemo ward, you know. Yeah. So I never wrote back.
No, interesting.
And I don't think she ever expected it.
No.
Although she complains a bit about it.
Great. All right. Really interesting. Yeah, so obviously, it sounds like most of what she was writing was completely out of context for you in a way. It's in a different kind of context. But obviously, this is something you're promoting now. Do you encourage people to actually write more on message, if you know what I mean? Or is it actually, you think, a good thing that they're actually writing about something completely different?
I think it depends on the individual.
Hmm.
But what we're encouraging is that people write whatever they want, but as long as it's heartfelt. So it comes from their heart.
Right.
And they're writing to someone whose life has changed quite dramatically through no choice of their own. And while some people, you have to acknowledge the fact that the person has cancer, otherwise it becomes like the elephant in the room.
Right.
But it depends on which stage the individual is at, who's going to receive the letter, in their prognosis and life. So when you're, this is my personal view, is that would I want somebody sending me letters that are full of sympathy and empathy? Mm-hmm. Not really.
No.
You know, yeah. I don't think I'm that type of individual.
Right.
What I did want is cheering up, and she was spot on in terms of that. Mm. I wanted to know what was happening in her life, and she had a funny way of describing it.
Mm.
Since then, we've set up From Me to You. We did nothing with the letters for nearly 4 years.
Right.
And then last summer, Alison said we should go on The Listening Project.
One of my favourite programmes.
So we got in contact with Radio Sussex because they had this mobile caravan last year, which moved around the UK, recording conversations. So there was one in Sussex at a time that we could do. So we said, OK, we'll go down, and they accepted us. And we went into the caravan. We recorded 30 minutes of a conversation, all about the letters, about cancer, my cancer treatment. And they edited it down to 3 to 4 minutes. And they aired it on Christmas Day on Radio 4. And since then, it's been repeated on Radio Sussex and stuff like that. And while we were there, we got a really good feedback from the producers, who said, wow, this is such a great story and an inspiring story, because it's not just a story of cancer, it's a story of how your lives have changed. Mm. You know, you both worked in the city, you know, cancer came into your life as a dark thing. Alison wrote you letters, and a number of years later, you know, you've been cancer free for a number of years, and Alison's gone on to do her MA, become an author, write short stories, write a book. And neither of you hanker over the life that you had before.
Right.
So you've both moved on completely. It's a story of friendship. You know, there's all these different themes in it. So you should really do something about it. So we drove away, and we thought, yeah, we probably should, but didn't really have a clue what. And then, by coincidence, Alison got an email from a neighbour of her husband's who said that he had heard about her writing to me. He had a friend who lived in Germany, and he wanted to do the same, and could he borrow her idea? So she said, of course, it's not my idea. You know, anyone can write.
Yeah.
And a week later, he said, I have no idea what to say in this letter.
Mm.
can you come round and help me? And suddenly the light bulb moment happened. Right. Is that what that's what we should do? Is we can't make people write letters. We can encourage and inspire people to write letters. But what we can do is help them to think about why it's good to write, what to include in a letter and maybe not include in a letter, and what it's like to receive a letter. And so now we hold workshops.
Brilliant. Sounds great. One of the things that you so often hear about the people around someone with cancer is this inability to express themselves, or they don't know what to say, or it's embarrassing, or they just feel awkward around a person, so they quite often stay away from them because it's so difficult. Do you think these letters are a way of cutting through that somehow?
I think absolutely, because I experienced it, and I've seen a lot of people experience, is that there seems to be a flurry of activity and support when someone is first diagnosed. But then cancer is not like a cold. It doesn't go away in 2 weeks.
No, it's a very long journey.
It's a long journey, and people stop keeping in touch for lots of different reasons. It can be laziness. It can be fear. It can be they don't know what to say. And so they don't keep in contact. But for the person who's going through the treatment, it's a very socially isolated place. And especially as people are getting diagnosed younger and younger, people their lives are completely transformed into something that they didn't want and never wished for. And yet their friends' lives are moving on in the same way that they had thought theirs were going to be. You know, they get married, they're having kids, and meanwhile you're just stuck in a whole episode of something dire. And so I think people, when they ask how you are, they don't always want to know the answer. And so you can judge that as well, because if you start to tell them, the glaze comes over, or they tell you some awful story about somebody that they know has been diagnosed with cancer.
It's classic, though. Why does that happen so often?
I don't know. People feel as though they have to tell you these stories. And often those people have died as well.
Yes,
you know?
That's right.
So it does nothing to help you. And you also get the cancer concerned crick in the neck, where people always hold their heads to one side when they talk to you. And so people don't, for lots of reasons, keep in contact with you. And people even avoid you. So writing a letter actually alleviates that. Because what you can say in a letter, because you can think about what you're going to say, is often better than a random conversation. And I think you can consider more about what you're going to say than you can in an email. And definitely more than in a text, because we've all misconstrued texts, because they're short and you can get the wrong end of the stick from them.
Yeah.
Because there's no tone or intonation in them. Whereas when you get a letter, when you sit down to write a letter, there's something physical and mental that happens when you pick the pen up and engage with paper. Because suddenly you start to write and your thoughts just flow. And so what we say is that when you write those letters, write what your mind and your thoughts are telling you. And it can be as simple as what's happening in your day. And it is critical to keep it heartfelt, to keep it honest, and to, if you can, make it a bit cheery. Because if you don't have the ability to write with humour, which is really difficult, just describing where you are is often... You know, I'm looking out of the window at the garden, you know, the tulips are out and they're, you know, beautiful colours. If you're sat at home and you're looking at, you know, you're in a flat, that would just make you just think, wow.
Yeah.
Or it might make you think, I will hate them because they got tulips. But at least someone has thought of you to send you the letter.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, that's the next thing I was about to ask you about, was this, you're very specific about that. These are proper letters. I mean, the Royal Mail must be very pleased with your campaign. and you don't hold much track with emails and the like. And The other thing about a letter, which is maybe distinctive from all the other things, is actually a physical thing,
yes,
which none of the others are anymore, are they?
No.
I imagine that's an important part of it.
Well, it is important because not only is it to come through the door, and it's a nice thing to receive, but you get to keep it.
Right.
So it's got texture, it's got smell. You know, you can send scented letters if you want to, you know, okay. And you think of old Victorian, yeah, you know, love letters that they used to sell. So you can hold it, touch it, and keep it. You can put it in your bag. You can take it out whenever and whenever you want to. You don't have to go into your search engine on Google. You don't need internet access to try and find the email that someone, lovely email that someone sent you 2 years ago to find out.
You can't find it.
The letters are normally easily accessible.
Mm.
And you get to keep them.
Interesting. And of course, books of letters are very well-read things, aren't they?
Well,
people
they
are really interested.
Yeah,
in...
people are really interested in that mode of communication. And the good thing is that it is great to receive because you can choose when you want to read it.
Hmm.
So when I received Alison's letters, I used to not always rip them open as soon as they came in through the letterbox. I would save them. So say I had a day when I wasn't feeling great or I was feeling nauseous or I had something to do, I would save it because I was thinking, that is going to be a special part of my day today. Mm. And I would save it and I would often sit in an armchair with a cup of tea and read that letter. And I'd read it several times. And that whole ritual around it was it just a connection to somewhere else which was completely different from where I was. Mm.
And so, you know, can you describe the effect that it had on you to read that?
It used to transport me to another plane, if you like. It just transported me to someone else's life. It made me feel that somebody had thought about me, that they had taken the trouble to think about what they could say to me, and that it was time that they could have used doing anything, but they had chosen to spend it writing to me. And when I received it, I felt as though I was connected to that person or connected to Alison. Because I had no idea what she was doing at that point in time, but the letter was a point in time. And I knew that she was sat on her sofa writing that letter. And so I felt connected to her. And I was sharing her stories were especially for me.
Mm. And this is a guess, but was the fact that actually you didn't know her that well made it a little bit more special in a way? Because she didn't have to do it. You know what I mean? It's not like your best friend.
No. And I think through every cancer journey, you know, there are surprises and there are disappointments.
Mm.
So you have friends who you think will be there for you and actually aren't.
Mm.
And you have surprise visitors. And Alison was one of those surprise and special visitors that came unexpectedly out of nowhere and came with me throughout the whole 2 years. And during that whole 2 years, our friendship developed and developed and developed.
Mm.
And then when I got my first all clear, she decided she was going to get married as well to a very nice man called Ben. But she asked me to help organise her wedding, which you only ever ask your best friend.
Yeah.
And then when she asked me to bake 120 cupcakes for her, I knew I was in.
Fantastic. Very nice. Okay, so you mentioned earlier about the fact that, you know, passing conversations are just not that great for saying things and actually sitting down and considering things. I mean, particularly the kind of things that you think are easier or better or come across better in the written form than spoken or by any other of our 21st century means.
Well, often people don't know what to say. And it's the simple things which often are the easiest. So to be honest, if you haven't seen someone, tell them, I haven't seen you around for a while. And I just thought, I haven't seen you around for a while. It would be good to catch up, but I realise things may not be that easy for you. Or one of my favourite letters that someone else wrote was, I was walking along the street and I remember I walked past a cafe where we used to have a cup of coffee. I thought of you, and I can't wait for the next time that we can have a cup of coffee there. Let me know when you'd like to do it. You know,
that's a whole letter.
That's a whole letter.
Fantastic.
And, but it gets the message across. I'm thinking of you. It's and I think, you know, when you're so with cancer and you become isolated from your real, from your life as it was, just a connection with somebody, just saying those things, it's so uplifting.
Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. So now I'd like to go talk a little bit more about the other side of it. You actually have talked about how Alison actually got unexpected benefits. People of the letter writers find out they get a lot more from it than they expected.
I think they do. And I think it's unexpected. I think you're right. It is unexpected. I think they get a feeling of that they're helping in some way. That, you know, a lot of people feel helpless. They don't know what to do.
Right.
You know, unless you're a neighbour and you can pop around with a bunch of flowers or a casserole or something like that, you don't know what to do. So writing a letter sort of alleviates that need, because a lot of people feel the need to be want to do something, but they don't know what to do.
Right.
So writing a letter alleviates that need. And I also think they find that when they start writing, they think about that person. And there's something then that happens when they start thinking about it, about the way they write the letter. And it's almost therapeutic to write. I mean, there's proven studies that say that, you know, writing journals and stuff is cathartic and helpful. Yeah. I think writing a letter to someone specific in mind also has a lot of positive attributes to the individual who's writing.
Okay, so here we are. We've got the person who's hopeless at writing, doesn't know how to get started. You know, well, it sounds a great idea, but honestly, I've never written a letter in my life. You know, you must have this, presumably, to deal with. A few hints and tips of where, you know, where people should start.
Well, one of the first things is to probably find out where they live, because you might not even know in this day and age because you where these people live.
Good point.
And that leads me to that you should probably ask them for that address. And then you should say, I'm thinking of why you're asking them for an address. I'm thinking of writing you a letter.
Right.
Because I think it's important to sort of get them bought into the process.
You've created a bit of expectation too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And anticipation.
Yeah.
And if they don't want a letter, they can say, I'd rather you don't.
Mm.
Or if you don't hear from them, then that's tantamount to say, oh, I don't want to hear from you. So if they say yes and you get the address, then you can you can write the envelope.
Yeah,
you can write the envelope now.
Yeah, it's a start.
It's a start. So then I think it's a case of on our website we've got a lot of writing tips.
All right.
Of to do's and not to do's and why it's good to write, and you know you can take a look at those and on our website, but the common theme we get is nobody knows how to start that letter. The opening line is the tricky one.
That's the tough one.
You know, you can do the dear X, but then the next line is the trickiest. And I think, again, it's be honest, be simple, and say why you're writing. You know, I've heard that you have cancer, and I thought it would be a good idea to write to you. Or you could say, I went to a writing workshop, one of ours, of course, and they told me about how good it is to write to people who have cancer. And you can do that. A trick I found, because I've subsequently written to people who have had cancer, is to think about buying a very good card with a picture that has something in common between the two of you or has some comedy element to it.
Okay, yeah.
Because that breaks the ice.
Because so you write the letter in the card, the first
one. In the card, yeah. And okay. I've done that often on the first one, where it would say, I saw this card and I immediately thought of you.
Right.
You know, or thought of something that had happened between us.
Mm.
And that's your opening line. And then once you get past that opening line, I think you're off and running. Because then you've sort of warmed up. And then you're off and running with the writing. And as long as you don't compare people to other people that you know who have had cancer.
Right, that's right up there with the no-nos, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, you don't tell them, I've heard that chemotherapy doesn't work in these type of cases, right. Or I would never have chemotherapy, or I have you tried vitamin C treatments? I did, and they worked. Things like that are advice that you don't really want to hear.
They seem very out of context in yes. what you're talking about here, which yes. is a completely different kind of
but
dialogue.
But there's some people who think that they would probably, because they're writing to them, would be able to have that conversation with them, because they may have that conversation with them if they saw them. But I don't think that type of conversation is helpful. What we're trying to promote is put yourself in the position of the person who's receiving the letter. Would you really want that type of letter? No. What you would want is a letter that actually makes you, cheers you up, and makes you think that somebody's thinking of you.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter how mundane the letter is.
It's interesting, that point.
You know? Yeah. Because to someone else reading it,
somebody else's mundane is interesting.
It's somebody's yeah. in, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so you mentioned this big no-no about, yeah, I know somebody with had your cancer and they die. Apart from that, are there any other sort of standout no-nos that you think you shouldn't use these for?
I would say that, again, it's around advice around treatment, about prognosis, about statistics, about anything that's really that negative as well. You know, if you're going through a rough time yourself,
right,
you might not want to put that in a letter to say, you know, I'm going yeah. through a terrible time with my boyfriend.
Yeah. You might think
girlfriend.
You're in a bad state, but what about yeah. me?
What about me? It's not a cry for help for yourself.
No.
You know, in terms of saying, you know, I'm having terrible relationship problems, my divorce has gone pear-shaped, I'm not getting any alimony, or, you know, or the dog got run over or something like that. Mm. That's really not something that
no.
I think would be something you would put in a letter.
Mm. Okay, that makes sense. So the listening project program, is that actually still available somewhere?
Yeah, it should be available on iPlayer.
Oh, great. All right, well, I'll look up the address of that and make sure everybody gets it, because it'd be nice to be able to share that with everybody as well. There's also a little dialogue between the two of you on your website.
There is.
There's
a YouTube clip on there. Yeah. Yes, of Alison and I talking about From Me to You.
Yeah. And so do you want to give listeners the address of the From Me to You site?
Yes, it's www.frommetoyouletters.co.uk.
Okay, that's easy.
And we're on Twitter, and we're also on Facebook, and recently on Instagram.
Right, great stuff. So lastly, let's just get onto the educational bit now for these people who really think they want a hand to get started. What are you offering?
So now we offer a workshop. We also offer, we speak at literary events and we do presentations.
You say we?
Alison and I.
Just the two of you.
Just the two of us.
Yeah.
We hold workshops in London, in Brighton, in Berkshire, anywhere that we're going to probably
have
as long as we can spread the word about writing letters, we'll go. And in that workshop we talk about our story, we do writing tips, how it's good to write, how it's good to receive a letter, and then we get cracking with writing letters. So we give people about 15 minutes to think about writing a letter. Originally, we started off with 15 minutes to think about your opening line, thinking that was the most difficult.
Yeah.
Something happens when you bring, and the workshop only runs for an hour and a half, and we normally write in it about an hour into the workshop. Something has happened in that hour that people suddenly find they want to get off the starting blocks and write.
Right.
We don't have ever, I've never seen anybody with a blank piece of paper.
Amazing.
The first workshop we held, I was amazed by how much people had written. Not only had they written the first line, they'd written a letter and was ready to post it.
Great.
And what we've now realised is that not everybody has a friend or a family member, surprisingly, because cancer rates are now so high, that has cancer or doesn't want to write that letter. So we now offer two other offerings in the workshop. One is that we have a group of people who have asked us, would we write to them? So we give very basic details, their Christian name, their age, type of cancer they have, and just a little bit about their hobbies. And people write a letter to them.
So this is like a dating agency.
No, it's definitely not a dating agency, because the letters are all, we never give the address.
Right. I see. So they're sent through you.
They're sent through us.
Interesting, yes.
We never divulge the addresses of either party.
Okay.
And we, if the recipient wants to write back to the individual, which we don't really encourage because we're not in the line of pen pals, and
right.
you enter into an element of risk because we've introduced people and we have no background checks for them,
sure.
or anything, is that they, we always do it through us. But interestingly, only a couple of people have come back and said that they would like to the write to the people who wrote them a letter. And the third offering we now do is for an organisation in Northampton, started off with them, where we write letters to people we don't know. So it's anonymous to anonymous, and it's a one-off.
Oh.
And it's the charity in Northampton give gift bags on a Friday to people who are in a ward who are going through cancer surgery. And into the gift bag, we now pop a letter that someone has written in our workshop, or some people go away from the workshop and think this is a great idea and I want to carry on writing, and they'll submit letters to us and we pop them in the gift bag. So when you're in hospital, you get a letter from somebody or a card from someone you don't know, just saying, hi, I'm thinking of you. This is what, you know, this is my day.
So that's very interesting, because it's quite different to
yes.
your situation that you described.
Yes.
Is you've changed the rule book a bit.
So what effect does that have? And the thing is that we never thought that that would happen.
No.
But it's evolving. And it's because of people taking our idea
mm-hmm.
and thinking about it, as well as us thinking about it and us responding to it. So that has evolved, and now we've launched a campaign called Donate a Letter.
Mm.
So where people can write a letter, all they know is that it's to someone who has cancer, and you write that letter, and you just, and we make sure it doesn't go off before we see it. So that we make sure that it's suitable,
right.
that it's not going to cause offence, and we keep a copy of the letter for risk purposes, because we don't want any upset happening.
No.
So we're finding that that donator letter and that anonymous thing actually draws in more people, because for some reason, and we haven't quite identified it yet, people feel a bit more comfortable about writing to someone they don't know.
Mm. I can imagine that as a writer, yeah.
So and they can be creative. They can be as creative as they want.
That's their rip, basically.
Yeah. So it becomes almost like a creative writing exercise then as well.
Yeah.
In the form of a letter or a card.
And what do you think is the effect for the person receiving a letter from somebody they don't know at all?
I think it's a big lift.
Mm.
Because I think it's a joy when you get a letter unsolicited, which lands on your doorstep, and it just says, "You're doing great. Keep on doing what you're doing, and we're all thinking of you," or something to those words. That's a great lift, that something positive is coming out of it.
Yeah, very interesting. I never predicted that would come out of your initiative.
No,
yeah.
We did, and it's evolved, because we originally would just write to a friend or family member, because that's what we knew. And then when it was World Cancer Day back in February, we said, please let us know if you'd like a letter. And Alison and I wrote letters to people who were nominated. And we got great response to that, both from the people who nominated them and the people who received them. And so then when we went to the workshop, when we started doing the, for the gift bags, it took it on to another level, because we don't know who we're writing to.
Mm.
And so there's only the two of us. So we can't write all these letters. So we need to encourage people to write letters. And we thought, what a brilliant thing to suggest in a workshop. I would say in the last workshop, over 60% wrote to the gift bag scheme.
It's nice because it's got the elements of charity in it, which is in charity, yeah. You just give them money because you want to help some people, you don't know them, but they need help, you know, that's great. But it's interestingly personal as well, even though there's no personal connection.
No.
But it's,
and often the letters are, you know, one letter was something around Easter is coming and daffodils are out and I'm looking forward, I've been given chocolate up for Lent. And I'm looking forward to buying an Easter egg.
Yeah,
you know, it can be that's quite interesting. You think, well,
yeah,
you know, I haven't really thought about Easter. You know, if you suddenly received it and you've been in your bubble, you know.
Yeah. Well, look, I think we're going to have to finish there.
Okay.
It's really interesting to talk about all this, Brian. And I shall point everybody towards your website
and come to one of our workshops.
Workshops, thank you. Yes. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, there was a lot more to a simple regular letter than you might imagine. It's a great idea and hopefully one that many will want to try. As usual, look at the Yes to Life website for all the links for this week's show. Go to yestolife.org.uk, choose Media Centre from the left-hand sidebar and then UK Health Radio. While you're there, you might want to read up about what we do at Yes to Life, and even decide to become a supporter or a friend of Yes to Life. Coming up in the Yes to Life calendar of events is a chance to find out about the health benefits of linseed from linseed producer and enthusiast Derwin Banks at his farm in Surrey. It's on Saturday the 10th of June near Horsham, and to find out more about it, look on the Yes to Life website under events. Next week, I shall be talking about medical coaching, not something I'd heard of until very recently, with Tiffany Carlson. I hope you can listen again. Goodbye. Thank you.